This episode is going to be my five favorite clips from the episodes, mainly over the last 6 to 12 months, that I think can be really valuable and potentially life impacting.
You must learn to trust your word. The only way to trust your word is don't do anything that you haven't said you were going to do, and vice versa. If you do what you say and you say what you do, you build trust in yourself, and there's ultimate compounding efforts on your belief that happens.
We need to understand that every decision in business is an investment decision.
What's the main ingredient or main ingredients of a video that performs really well?
Authenticity.
Yeah, massively, 100%.
Authenticity. There's no script. There's no bullshitting. You're getting what you're getting.
Yes. If you're not attention hacking, you're not going to succeed. You've got to find out, how am I going to attention hack? You have to continually ask yourself, how am I going to attention hack? How am I going to grab someone's attention online and offline? That is the key.
All right, guys, so we have a different episode coming this week. It's something I've been planning for a while and was just waiting for the right opportunity to put this out there and release it to you guys now. For those of you that follow me on Instagram, you would have seen that over this past week we lost my nan, who's someone that I've been incredibly close with my entire life. For those of you who know my story, she had a big role in raising me along with my mom and my granda. So with that being the case, obviously my schedule and a little bit of my headspace has been all over the place this last week. So I haven't been able to line up my calendar with any guests, but this episode, genuinely, I honestly believe this has the power to be more valuable than any solo episode with a guest that we've done. It's something that I've been thinking about doing for a while. And the reason being, we're very close to 100 episodes released for the podcast over the last 2 years, which is crazy. And with the pace that everything moves, we release a new episode every week. I feel like some of these lessons or moments or these nuggets of value get moved on and forgotten too quickly. So this episode is going to be my five favorite clips from the episodes, mainly over the last 6 to 12 months, that I think can be really valuable and potentially life impacting. So what we're going to do from here, I'm going to share my top five, and I've spent quite a bit of time digging through the archives to find you five of these clips that I think, as I said, can be really valuable. And then what we're going to do from here, every Tuesday, we're going to be releasing episodes as per usual. Then on a Thursday or a Friday, we're going to be releasing one of these. Usually it'll be anywhere between 5 to 15 minutes, no longer. One clip, one message, one highlight, one moment that you can take away and think of and potentially implement into your life. So we'll get into it in a sec. Before that, do you mind if I ask for a quick favor? For anyone watching on YouTube, just like this video and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. And if you're listening to Apple Podcast or on Spotify, if you could leave a 5-star review and subscribe if you haven't already, that really helps the channel grow, and I really, really, really appreciate it. So enough from me, we'll go into the clips. All right, so the first clip that we're going to play is from Josh Saunders. We had him on the podcast not too long ago. The reason I started with this clip, it's probably the shortest one of the lot. It's about a question I asked him. It's something I've asked a lot of guests in the past about, how do you build self-belief? Now, I'm someone who has been blessed, that's been lucky enough to have a really strong self-belief, but looking out into the world and having conversations with people, I genuinely think self-belief is something 95% of people walking around could have a lot more of. And anytime I've asked people to explain how they think people can build or develop their own self-belief, I've always got different answers. This would have been definitely the most clear and the most practical answer. So I'll leave it at that. Some really good information for how you can build your self-belief. Let's hear what Josh has to say. On the mindset piece, you said everything mindset, you have the belief that everything mindset is a skill and can be learned in that fact. Now, for me, what I've realized about anything mindset related, I feel like I can have like a gut feel or an intuition something's right. But this is like the contradicting thing. It's like you need to believe you can, or believe you will, believe you are, before it actually happens, for it to happen. Then once you start to get a little bit of the real life feedback, the real life results, the initial seed of belief that you had gets 10x, 100x, because you have that belief. But now once you've been able to experience the benefits of a mindset shift or a new technique or whatever, then I feel like it gets grounded and can never be destroyed. But how do you get people, because I know you do a lot of mentoring and coaching as well, to get people to get that initial belief that they already are, that they already can, before it's happened? Because that's a lot of the things that I see for people, whether it be business, whether it be relationships, whatever, dating, whatever, the way they see themselves, they can't make that initial jump. I'll tell them, for me, I felt like it came pretty naturally, and I'm still trying to unpack and think about where my, you know, innate self-belief and confidence come from. But how do you get people, when people are struggling with picking up a new skill or whatever it may be, anything in life that you're mentoring someone on, to get that initial bit of belief to know that they can do all these things before they actually have the evidence that they can?
It's a great question. Belief is also a skill. So you work on it, and it's not something you intrinsically have. You said it felt quite natural, but I imagine 10 years ago, you have a tenth of the belief that you have now. I'm the same. And you should never let that stop you from doing anything. So I have a saying that I used to use, and it used to be like my slogan or my catchphrase, do what you say what you do. And it's very easy to orientate your life in a correct mechanism if you only do that. If I am not willing to do something, I will not say it. Point blank. Like you guys said, be here at 1. I fucking rocked up at 1. I even made the wrong turn and went down the wrong way in the tunnel. And I was like, I'm still going to be there at 1 because I left early and I allocated for this.
Yeah.
If I said I'm going to add an extra session and I do it, I don't say anything outside of that. So for people that want to get to this stage where they can do it with higher order tasks, because I wasn't always like this, but if you want to do it with higher order tasks, you have to nail the 1% as the tiny, infinitesimally small things you don't think matter. So if people want to instill belief in themselves, you must learn to trust your word. The only way to trust your word is don't do anything that you haven't said you were going to do, and vice versa. It's if you do what you say and you say what you do, you build trust in yourself, and there's ultimate compounding efforts on your belief that happens. So if people want a really foolproof way to do this, say you're going to wake up at a certain time and wake up at that time. Say you're going to eat breakfast in the morning and eat fucking breakfast. Say you're going to have lunch at a certain time, have lunch. Say you're going to have dinner and then have that dinner at the same time, and then say you're going to go to bed and go to bed at that time. And people think, what the fuck are you even talking about? You've just proven to yourself that you can be successful.
That's massive.
Because you are. Because you said you were going to do it and then you followed through. That doesn't seem like much. Do that for 6 months. Then say, I'm going to start a business. Then do it.
You know what? I've asked that question to many people. No one's given me such a clear answer like that. And the fact that when you don't do that, it's a subconscious cut to your self-belief. And whether you're aware of it or not, you're doing damage to yourself by not doing what you said you would do. And then if you can't even do what you say will you do, how are you going to do things that you can't even imagine yourself doing right now? If you can't even do something as easy as showing up on time, waking up, training, not eating, all this shit, right?
So go to the authority thing. Why the fuck would I believe you if you don't believe you?
All right, so the second clip I'm going to share with you today is with Jack DeLosa, $100 million CEO, extremely successful in business. Now, this clip from the episode we had him on, it's talking about an extremely relatable position that a lot of not even first time, any early stage entrepreneur finds themselves in, where you're spending all your time in the business and you're at the point where you feel like you're spread so thin and you need to increase revenue so you can bring more people on, but you can't spend more time doing things to increase revenue without hiring help, and you get stuck on that hamster wheel. Jack has a really clear strategy for how businesses can move past this. And let's hear from Jack. You talk about getting stuck in these situations and it feels like there's no way out. Mm. And something you said was like, I know it's a completely relatable situation. It's like, what do you then do? What some of the things people can do when they're at the stage when they need to hire so they can free up some time, but they don't have the money to hire yet. And the only way they can hire is if they bring in more money, but they start. What's the path out of that sort of moment and that space for a business owner? Because like you can say, it can feel like when you're in it and it's all you can see, you're trapped in it. But from outside looking in, as someone who's mentored so many businesses, there is always a path out.
90% of the time in that scenario, it comes down to focusing on improving the quality of their marketing and sales in that specific scenario. And so let me explain what I mean by that. And I'll set some kind of contextual foundations for this. Every single business operates in a resource-constrained environment. Doesn't matter whether you're the Entourage, doesn't matter whether you're Amex, Telstra, the Australian government. We all operate in a resource-constrained environment. We only have so much time. We only have so much money. We only have so much personnel. We only have so much brand equity. We only have so much customers. We only have so many funnels, whatever it might be. And so when discussing strategy, particularly for small to medium-sized businesses, what we're really discussing is resource allocation. How do you allocate the very finite amount of resources that you have?
And time, sorry to cut you off, is one of those massive resources. Huge. As well, right?
Yes. It's often the main, time yeah. and money are the main constraints of most small to medium sized business owners, right? Once you resolve the time constraint, the money constraint, the next constraint becomes know-how. Like, okay, I've got the cash, I've got the time, but I just don't know how do I build a leadership team, right? But money and time are the big ones initially. And so ultimately, when thinking about strategy, what we're really talking about is how do you allocate limited resources against unlimited options, right? And so we need to understand that every decision in business is an investment decision. When you choose to allocate half an hour to a task, that's an investment. When you choose to bring on a staff member, that's an investment. When you choose to spend 5K on marketing a month, that's an investment. When you choose to start building a leadership team, that's an investment. Every decision in business is an investment decision. And what do we look for in investment decisions? The answer is asymmetry, which is how do I put in the least amount of input for the most amount of output? Not because you want to minimize your input, but just because we recognize that we're resource constrained. And so we want to deploy the initiatives that are going to require the least amount of effort for the most amount of return.
Yep.
Exactly. Where, let's say 90% of the time when you look at a small to medium-sized business owner, particularly one that's totally constrained on money and time, usually the first initiative that's going to give you that asymmetry is sales conversions. The second is marketing conversions. And so let's say we go into a business and they're converting 20% of their leads. The vast majority of businesses don't have a sales process. They haven't engineered a sales process to maximize conversions. They're kind of just selling intuitively. Even e-com businesses, you know, putting up landing pages, but there's not a lot of thought put into CRO. There's not a lot of thought put into nurturing people that don't buy. There's not a lot of thought put into retargeting, right? And so let's say we've got a conversion rate of 20% or you've got a landing page that's converting at 0.9%. We get those conversions from 20% to 40% without generating more leads. So we're not spending more on marketing. We're not spending more effort on marketing. We're not even spending more time in sales. We're doing the same amount of activity, but we're doubling the output that comes from it. That gives us that first inflection point and that first asymmetry point. And we've now got some surplus revenue we can start paying with. Now, sure, that increase in sales is also going to fall on delivery. So you do have an increased delivery output required there because you're making more sales. But provided we can address that and deliver on that, what we've done is it's like, okay, well, Jack, it's cute. It's a 20% increase in sales. I said, no. If all of the other metrics hold, we've just doubled the revenue of that business. All we did was improve the sales process. And so let's take an e-com business, for example. You've got a landing page that's converting at 0.9%. But, and again, you would see this. People would come to you all the time for mentoring around e-com style businesses, right? And it's like, okay, let's look at the headlines. Let's look at the subheadlines. Let's look at the copy. Let's look at the images. It's the fundamentals. None of this is rocket science. It's the fundamentals of what I said before, CRO, conversion rate optimization. You can take a landing page that hasn't had any CRO from 0.9% to 1.8%. Again, we just had a really significant 100% increase in revenue in that instance that we now need to deliver on, yes, but we haven't spent any more time or money from a marketing or a sales perspective. And so often the play is, because most business owners are entrenched. If you kind of look at, there's really three things you need to do. You need to market, you need to sell, you need to deliver. And then within that, there's a bunch of stuff you need to do around scaling, like team and operations and financial management and stuff. But really three things that we all do. We market, we sell, we deliver. Out of those three things, the vast majority of entrepreneurs spend their vast majority of their time in delivery, which is either product development and delivery or service development and delivery. Which often means the go-to-market stuff, the stuff that generates the revenue, the marketing, the sales, is often below average to begin with. And that's not a criticism, because the focus on delivery is necessary for the first period of time, right? It's also not a criticism because it's a gold mine. You know, if you've built a business, whether it's doing six figures, seven figures, eight figures, we have some businesses doing, like, you know, they come to us doing $20 million a year, they're not doing any marketing. Nor have they got a sound sales process that's maximizing conversion. It's not even close.
Imagine
to
that's
it.
Quite exciting when it's, those businesses want to walk in the door.
It's hugely exciting. And those are the ones, you know, you might look to sort of invest in and help them grow from a partnership perspective. And so it's frightening but also exciting just how many businesses are successful with subpar marketing and sales. And so to bring it right back to your initial question, usually the lever out of the bind of I don't have the time, I don't have the money, I don't have anything, and I'm working 70 hours a week is improve the quality of your marketing and your sales. Take that surplus revenue, and I'm going to use the word revenue here, not profit, because it's not going to go to the bottom line. It's going to be paid out as divvies. We're actually going to take the revenue and use it to start backfilling you in product delivery or admin or ops or wherever you're spending your time now. And so our whole kind of, not our whole, but usually the playbook is generate surplus revenue, deploy that revenue against backfilling the entrepreneur wherever they're spending their time on low value activities currently. Elevate, which is why my book's called Elevate, elevate the entrepreneur to a point where they can focus on marketing and sales. And usually at that point, that's usually a pretty fundamental shift in the trajectory of the business where they never look back because you've now got a delivery function that's running, whereas previously it was taking you 40 hours a week. It's now taking you 6 hours a week in oversight and management and dealing with big customer complaints, whatever it might be. And they're now focusing on marketing and sales and they're getting good at it. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because we're now able to generate more revenue. Generally speaking, for small to medium-sized business owners, there's a fixed cost base, right? And so generally speaking, if you take a business from $1 million to $2, $3, $4, $5 million, that incremental increase in revenue has a disproportionate amount of profit margin because the fixed cost base is already covered.
It stays relatively the same.
It might increase, but it will increase slower than your revenues.
Definitely.
And so at that point, you start coming into more revenue, greater margin, and then they can do things like start to employ leaders in the business. So I want a director of sales, someone that can head up this function without me, and they can drive growth in our sales function or our CRO function 50, 60 hours a week, and I'll spend an hour with them a week in a one-on-one and, you know, be available to them around the clock. But, you know, that then the sales function takes up an hour a week of my time. And so generally that's the play is improve the quality of the marketing and the sales. We can then start, once we've got the surplus revenue, we can then start to improve the quantity of it if we'd like to. But that's the first unlock that's often the first domino in a really exciting chain of events that follow.
Just a quick one from me. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'd know that after scaling Happy Skin Co. to over $10 million per year, I spent close to 18 months creating the Viral Brand Builder program, which teaches someone with zero experience how to launch and scale their very own e-commerce brand. With over 100 training videos and direct access to me, including one-on-one calls, you'll be guided throughout the entire process. Now, we already have a bunch of incredible results from students that are making multiple 5 and 6 figures per month. So if you want to learn how to build a business that has the potential to completely change your life, then click the link in the description and book in an application call today. Spots are limited as you'll be speaking directly to me. So hopefully I'll chat to some of you soon. But until then, let's get back to the podcast. All right, the third clip I'm going to share with you today is another one from Jack that was just so much value in that episode. He reveals his best strategies for instantly increasing profit. And one of the strategies that he shares with us that can be done immediately has the potential, and he showed me so many examples of this, to immediately double the amount of net margin you make, so net profit you make at the end of the year with one small pivot in your business. So let's hear from Jack. What's some of the things you look at to a business, whether it be processes or numbers or margins when it comes to, okay, let's actually, we don't even have to right now talk about growing top line. How do we just improve bottom line from what we're doing?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Often you can achieve both with the one initiative. And so what we will generally look at is how to increase profitable revenue, right?
Yep.
And so what I mean by that is how do we deploy intelligent and efficient and profitable lead generation strategies? And so a lot of businesses are either marketing on an ad hoc basis or not at all. And if you can, and the reason they're doing that is because they're viewing marketing as an expense. They might spend $5,000 a month, $10,000 a month, $50,000 a month on it, and they're either not tracking an ROI or they're not getting an ROI. And so if we can deploy effective and efficient lead gen strategies and track their ROI and prove that it's profitable, then essentially we have an unlimited marketing budget, right? The second thing, as we've discussed, is sales conversions. The other thing with a lot of business owners all of these things directly and significantly impact profit. But the other thing that does, which a lot of business owners don't fully consider, is price. And so as business owners, we're really good at undervaluing ourselves because we know all of our flaws and there might be a bit of imposter syndrome and there's operational flaws in every business, even the big businesses that you'd think are perfect, they're not. And because we're familiar with all of the flaws and operational deficiencies in our own business, we undervalue ourselves, and that reflects in undervaluing the product or the service, and that extends to undercharging. And so for about 90% of small to medium-sized businesses, they already have permission to significantly increase their price. Now, if you increase your price, let's say you charge $100 for your thing, and let's say at the end of the year, from a net profit before tax perspective, let's say you're operating on a net margin of 10%. Let's say we take the price of your thing from $100 to $110. It's like, you know, sounds like a insignificant price increase, but it's like, where does that extra $10 go? And the answer is straight to the bottom line. And so if you're operating on 10% net margin, well, we're now operating on a 20% net margin from a slight 10% increase. And a lot of small to medium-sized business owners have permission to increase their prices by significantly more than 10%.
Do you find, because you work with so many people, when you have that conversation, you're one of your coaches, hey, you might need to look at increasing prices. Is it, can't do that? Is that yes. like the first reaction?
It's always the first reaction. Yeah. And so there's a few different elements to that. There's some industries where increasing price isn't the right initiative, right? Maybe they're operating in a hyper price sensitive environment or industry, and therefore an increase in price would be net negative. And so you wouldn't do it in that instance. Or they're, you know, lodging like government tenders and the government makes decisions purely on price, whatever it might be. And so 5% of the time it's not intelligent to do, but 95% of the time it is. And the reason for that is it falls straight to the bottom line. So they already have permission to increase price. But if we can improve the quality of their marketing, the quality of their positioning, the quality of their messaging, the quality of their sales process, the quality of the CRO and the landing pages, well, now we have double permission to increase price because there's a significantly higher perceived value to the prospect that's coming through that buyer's journey. And so there is a disproportionate amount of uplift in price increases that are often lying dormant in the vast majority of high growth businesses.
And like you said, it's lifting bottom line and top line at the same time with just a few pivots exactly. and changes in the business. All right, our fourth clip for the episode is something for anyone in e-com. We all know the power of organic content. And one of our best examples of organic content and the power of it is Alia Bottle. They've been absolutely killing it. A lot of you would know they're part of the Viral Brand Builder program. They launched about 6-7 months ago. They've already sold out 4-5 times. If you spend time on TikTok, you would have seen their videos. In this clip, Yui and Danielle, they break down their entire process for creating the content from ideation to filming it to editing it. And they talk about and explain the key elements any viral video needs if it has the potential to resonate and go viral. Some really important information. Anyone in e-com, definitely listen to this and take notes because what they're doing in the organic content space, if you can figure out a way to replicate that in your own business with your own products, I'm telling you, you're going to increase your sales like crazy. In terms of like going viral, like what do you think's the things that like looking at the success of your content and the videos that have outperformed the other ones, what's the main ingredient or main ingredients of a video that performs really well?
Authenticity.
Yeah, massively, yeah. 100%.
Authenticity. There's no script. There's no bullshitting. Mm-hmm. You're getting what you're getting. Obviously, in the edit, things change. The narrative changes a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, we try to dial down the chaoticness. You'd think we'd be turning it up. No, we're dialing it down.
It's chaos.
Like, oh, they're just playing it up. Like, yeah. No.
Like anybody who hangs out with us will literally, you'll feel it.
Yeah.
The energy
yeah.
radiates off us.
So authenticity. Now, capturing that, the emotion, the reactions is obviously a big part of that. How much, so like when you post a video, like you post every day, just about, when you post a video, they're usually between like a minute and 2 minutes most of the time.
Yeah, they go for around 2.5 minutes now.
Yeah. Now, how much footage are you capturing to edit down into 2.5 minutes?
I'll say the most, I think. 8 hours of footage.
Yeah.
It was the one of the custom, what was it? The pot plants with the bamboo, that video. We made custom pot plants. So we got these pot plants from this supplier here, Posh & Co. And then we 3D printed our logo, stuck it on it, made it look like concrete and then put bamboo in it. There was a story behind why we chose bamboo from the owner of Stacks. Don, he told us his story and it was fucking that genuinely helped us get across the line.
Yeah.
It was one of the things that helped. That video, bro, because I was filming that video for months.
Yeah.
I was working on that before we even launched. And then we launched and then things was going viral. So we'll just orders every day. And I'm like, I have no time.
Yeah.
So it's just whenever we could, I was filming everything. So that was probably the hardest one. But genuinely.
And how long to edit? If there's 8 hours of footage into 2.5 minutes.
You don't want to know. Oh,
like a day or two. And I mean like.
And are you on CapCut on your phone editing all this?
All on my phone. I don't put
How's
it on my
your
computer.
Neck, man? Like
gone.
Gets smashed.
Yeah, mate, the Alia Bottle helps out.
Crazy.
A lot of hours of footage, hours of editing, but I'm getting better.
What about a standard one? For like people listening that think, fuck, there's no way I can film for 8 hours and edit for a day. But like
30 minutes now.
30 minutes to edit a video. Or 30 minutes of footage.
30 minutes of footage and then like. Because the way I do it is because I've been editing videos for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's a little secret and the easiest way to edit is So I dump all the footage in the timeline. I cut out what I want to create the story, mm-hmm. get rid of all the shit bits that I don't need.
Yeah.
And then I do a second pass. I do it in passes.
Mm-hmm.
The second bit, I come in and I get rid of any ums, ifs, buts, dead spaces. So I tidy it up. And then from there, I will bring in a soundtrack. And then the edit changes to that.
Yeah.
And it fits with the music.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it goes into like doing any zoom ins, punch ins, all that sort of stuff to make it more engaging. Mm-hmm. And then the captions.
Wow, that's actually quite similar to Joe's. Joe must have taught you everything he knows about editing.
Yeah, Joe taught me everything I need to know about that.
Now, so like logistically, like just to capture the content, people can get in their own head and think it's too hard. Like, so what would you recommend for people trying to start out? Because like you've just killed it so much with organic content. I want people to be able to take this themselves. So if you're just doing any task, like what? Get a tripod for your phone, $20, $30 off Amazon and just document it. Obviously, we've all seen you taping your phone to the roof to get different angles. It's just about like, how do you set up? You just got to think whatever you're doing, get just, a cool angle.
Just put the camera there. Don't forget the camera's there. So work with the camera. Make sure you're rotating a little bit. The camera can see what you're doing. Don't cover it. And then just every couple, like time lapse it. Just film everything, bro. Just film everything and then work with it later. That's my opinion.
In terms of like me doing content, that's the biggest thing for me. Like I'm so busy, got to do a million things. I feel like I don't have time. But realistically, it probably would take me like an extra minute each set to set up.
Just move the camera.
It's that. But I feel like, you know, that's why I've got Joe and I've got you. Makes it easy. A lot of people don't have the resources to be able to pay someone to do that as well. But not even like, that's not even necessarily better. Like some of the best stuff that works is just someone filming themselves and then it's all in the edit, right? It's like, but are you telling a story in these videos? Like, are you trying to tell a story or is it just legit documenting whatever's happening?
I mean, the day ends up being a story because it's like, there's always a beginning, middle, and end.
It ends
up like, okay, Danielle's just rocked up to my house. We're going to start getting everything prepared. Mm-hmm. Something's going to go wrong. Because it always happens. Something's going to be chaotic.
Capture the chaos.
We'll sit down, we'll start eating, or emails will come through. So we're doing customer service, and then, or a manufacturer will hit us up with like these issues, and we're trying to sort that out with like samples because we're always working on something. And then it's like all of a sudden 3 hours is flying by, and we're like, bro, we've got to get these orders out. So then there's the chaos.
Yeah, yeah.
And then printing out the orders, packing them, and fucking getting them to the post office. Now we're doing pickups every now and again.
Oh, you got the pickups now.
Yeah, first pickup on Monday.
Big boys.
Yes.
The pickups.
We should have done that.
What a relief.
Nah, but it's good content.
Yeah, it is good content. Plus, everybody loves the postman.
How far are you guys from the post office?
Depending on
who drives.
For everybody else, it's around 10 minutes.
Yeah.
For us, it's two. Because we take a helicopter.
Yeah. Now, in terms of like a little bit of like tactical stuff in terms of like posting and going viral on TikTok, what's some of the other little like things you've learned? So obviously you post at what time each day? You try and be consistent, post the same time every day?
Yeah, we try to post it around lunchtime. Mm-hmm. That's just what's happened. Like naturally when we first started, I was just posting whenever. Like that launch day, that video, it was 8 p.m. by then when I just posted that video.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You know, so then it just happened where I started figuring out like, okay, I'm posted 3 videos in a row at 12 p.m. on a Monday, on a Wednesday or a Friday or a Sunday, and then those videos would do well. I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to stick with that.
Okay,
if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
It could be the content. It could be the algorithm, the timing and whatnot, but I mean, I think it's majority content.
But yeah.
We're just stuck with those times.
Yeah. Like if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
And like other little things as well. Like you just posted something before we started recording. There was a misspelling. You're like, I'm not editing it. Like once it's live, I'm not
up to touching it.
Yeah.
What
is there any other little tactical things that you've kind of picked up along the way that.
Well, for us, when we first started posting, I don't know, TikTok was prompting us to add like a title.
Mm-hmm.
It was always saying add a description. It doesn't do that now, but we're like, okay, if TikTok is saying for us to do this, it wants it, so give it what it wants. So we would just title it something like the hook or just a brief description of what the day, you know,
is going to happen. Did you find that helped?
Yeah.
Helped.
Yeah. Really?
Because then when, as a viewer, you click on the video, you can see at the top bar what it's trending for. A lot of ours just come up as Alia Waddle because now it's trending.
Mm.
But some other ones would be like couples or photo shoot or something like that. And, you know, that obviously would perform well on TikTok.
Now, like if we look at the like pillars of the content that performs best, we've obviously got the coupley stuff. We've got like the packing orders and like printing labels. Obviously that always does well. What other like sort of videos kind of really perform well, do you think?
The girl math video.
Girl math video.
Or me doing that presentation of the highly offensive ad.
What's that one?
I've just made like a, it's like a compilation of clips of all that sort of stuff. And that was the video that I had. I ran over the Alia bottle.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
So, but I done like a, it was like an ad, but it was like, Alia bottle's the best motherfucking hot water bottle in the world. It's like AI voice screaming at you. And then I presented that to her like, it's going to be the best video. It's going to go viral, you know, I'm going to run this as an ad. Obviously you can't run it as an ad, but.
And how did it go?
On TikTok, it went well. People loved it. They wanted to see the full version and people were like, if I saw this ad, I would buy it. So,
yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah, wish, it was but, good. Yeah. So it's just doing funny shit.
It's just, funny stuff.
And then hopping on trends like that, taping the video, taping the camera to the ceiling, trying to be early on those sort of trends, but make it about the business. Like keep it in that niche, you know. We're not doing it and then just dancing for no reason. Like people will want to see us pack orders. All right, cool. What's a different way we can show this?
Let's hop
on the trend and pack orders, you know. You're getting the same content in a different.
And so how do you, where do you do your research? Obviously, do you, I'm assuming you spend a lot of time on TikTok.
Yeah. Oh man, when the video's uploading, it's taking time. So you're just there scrolling, ingesting. And
how do you, so what's your process of getting inspiration? Like obviously to jump on a trend, you need to see it. Like, do you have any tactics or process you do for research, inspiration? Then do you write your ideas down in your notes on an Excel sheet? How do you kind of do that?
We used to write a whole bunch of ideas out. We haven't executed on a single one of them because everything's just been natural. It's like, okay, we've seen this style, do it.
Yeah.
Like Danielle will just be like, okay, listen, we're filming a video. I don't want you to know. Just set up the phones and then just enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
And then it would be the girl math video or it would be fucking, you know, me setting up the phones, setting up the projectors. Yeah. Editing that video and presenting it to her. It's just, okay, got the idea, just execute it. Because it's so easy for us now, you know? Like, I mean, I have the background in videography and all that sort of stuff, so I'm always filming.
Yeah.
I can easily edit. But the videos aren't like these crazy things. Like, anybody can do them. You know what I mean?
So what would your advice be to, like, someone starting?
Do not procrastinate. Just do it. Don't overthink it and post it.
Overthinking it, I think, is one of the biggest killers of it. Particularly with content, right? It's so easy to be a perfectionist. Like, oh, but like you say you're a perfectionist, but like at the start, you're not going to be perfect. You need to do it and then get better and try and, you know.
The thing that I said in a video once, like put in the amount of effort equal to what that platform expects. Like for the website, go crazy. Like be a perfectionist with it. The website that we have now, I love it. You know, I'm very proud of it. We've done well with it. The product photos, everything. Like, that's where I spent hours and hours and hours on. But with the TikToks, we don't spend that much time. We try not to. It just takes time. But don't put in too much effort. Just keep it raw.
All right, guys. So the last clip in this episode is from the podcast I recorded with Jad from Gogglebox. Now, Jad is an extremely successful restaurateur. He's had multiple different cafes and venues in different areas that have all absolutely killed it, including his most recent venture, Misk. Have a look at Misk and what they do. It's incredibly impressive. But the reason I wanted to have Jad on, well, there was a number of reasons I want to have Jad on the podcast. But personally, from my experience, I live in Newtown in the city of Sydney. Now, if you don't know Newtown, it's about 2.5-3 kilometer street, King Street, where there's heaps of different cafes, restaurants, and bars. And the thing that breaks my heart is being someone from the small business world, I understand what you put into a business. It's your dream. It's your livelihood. It's everything. And I will just see so many, you know, new venues pop up and they'll open their doors and I'll walk past and there's no one in there. And then I walk past the next day or the next week and there's two people, there's three people, there's not enough. And it just breaks my heart because more often than not, I'm telling you, there's like on a new location, there's probably a 70, 75% churn. So many of these businesses are going out because they just open their doors and I think that's enough. If you've got a location, that's enough. It is not enough. You need to be leveraging everything in your power, offline and an online capacity, to build hype, to get people to know about you, to come in and visit your location. So in this clip, Jad shares everything he's doing and everything you need to do to get the attention of people, to get people into your venue, to spend money with you, to build that relationship so they keep coming in time and time again. As I said, for me, this one, I've just seen too many businesses shut and I see the business owners in there and it's heartbreaking for me. So if you know anyone in hospitality or anything similar where they're in a physical location, maybe a barbershop, Pilates studio, anything like that, a new physical location, they're struggling to get people in, please share this clip with them. It generally could save their business.
You've got to look at everything holistically, right? It's like when you want to, you know, build a great physique, you know, you don't just eat well. You know, how far do you want to go? Some people track their macros, you know, and whatever they call it, they track them. Some people go to the gym twice a day. They do yoga, they swim, they do that. The more they do, the better results they get. The more things they tick off and cross, the better the result they get. Same thing was hot with hospitality. You can't just go in, see a place for lease, go, fuck, the rent's cheap. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to just, you know, open up a brisket joint because me and my father love cooking brisket on the weekends. And because we love it, we think everyone else is going to love it and we're going to succeed. No, no, no. What's missing from the area? Why are you doing this and what's your skill set, right? Who's your support around you? How much money do you have? And what, you know, how much money are you willing to lose? And the way I look at it is, you know, when you, there's two ways you can open up a hospitality venue. You have a concept and it's a solid concept. You've worked on it, you know, let's call it, I don't know, a burger shop, right? You've got a burger shop concept, right? You've worked on it for ages. You've done the branding, you've done the marketing, you've done all the blueprints for it. You know the interior design, what it's going to be. And you're like, okay, now I'm going to go find a location, right? And you go out and you try to look for a location that you see that there's no burger shops around. And, you know, your risk of potentially succeeding or failing, you know, your risk of failing is quite low because you're providing a service and an offering to an area that doesn't really have it. Then the other way to open up a hospitality venue is you find an amazing location and you're like, okay, what can I do now with this location? That's how I've done it. I've just found really good locations and I'm like, okay, what's missing from this area? What should I bring? How can I do it? What can I do to market? And when it comes to market, I believe the biggest thing is the pre-opening marketing. That's the biggest thing. You know, invest in, I think mystery is good. Mm-hmm. Having a balance of being a little bit mysterious, not giving away too much, getting people excited, doing a countdown, creating cool flashing content to get people talking, you know, put little feelers out there through your own social media just to create really buzzing content to attract people and go, what's going on here? What's happening? Back in the day, it was all about let's show people the build. Let's get them on the journey. That's what I was doing with the picnic, right? So the way I marketed the picnic versus the way I marketed MISC was completely different. The way I marketed the picnic to the pre-opening, I got everyone on board with the whole journey.
Yeah.
Right? The build, the everything, it's coming. So people were investing in it. But the way I marketed MISC was I kept everyone out of it and very mysterious, showed them little bits and pieces of what it could be, what's to come, kept it super quiet, only released little things, built up a very good teaser campaign, and then came out with an absolute fucking bang. And then people were like, holy shit, what's going on here? What's this? There's obviously two different methods. Depending on the era that you're working in or the social media that you have around you, it can work. Now with the rise of TikTok and vlogging and buying into people's journey, I feel like for a hospitality business, if you're going to do it really well, jump on TikTok, showcase the journey, get people to invest in you and your belief and why you're opening a hospitality venue and what's involved and the struggles and the joys and the wins and the highs and lows. I think you'll do really well on that end because people are investing into the personal brand as well as the success of the business. So they want to come out and support you. And another thing is create a good culture. You got to create good culture and you can't think about the short-term dollar. The amount of free coffees, free drinks, free everything we've given out, I would say over $1 million.
Crazy.
Over $1 million just in comps.
Yeah.
Just in comps, just building relationships, building rapport, building the database, comps.
All the successful ones have built their own community within their space, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you say how much it's changed just from 5 years from the first – well, from Picnic.
Well, yeah, Picnic was 2016, so.
It seems like from the outside looking in, and I'm not like sitting down having half an hour conversation with these people, but people will open up the doors and they'll just think that's enough. Okay, we're going to walk past.
You got to have PR as well.
Yeah.
Press releases, articles. You got to infiltrate. You got to make noise. Somehow you've got to attention hack. Yes. If you're not attention hacking, you're not going to succeed. But you've got to find out how am I going to attention hack? Find out. It could be through your personality. It could be through your personalities of your staff. It could be through a particular item that you sell on your menu. You have to continually ask yourself, how am I going to attention hack? How am I going to grab someone's attention online and offline? That is the key.
And how much of it now is, that's where I was going to go next, online and offline. Obviously, yeah. You guys are killing it on social media. You can like all those you know, teaser content and the community you can build. And that is such a useful tool in my world. Mm. How much is online versus offline now? Like how can these like startup businesses leverage both? And is offline still as important in your local community, your local area?
100%. So that's a really good question. And it's also almost extremely relatable. So we're about to launch dinner service, right? So we've got an online strategy, which is teaser campaigns. You see it, something's coming soon, what's going on, show snippets of like, you know, Misk at Dark, right? Social campaigns, social videos, TikTok, Instagram, that's our online strategy. Our offline strategy is building a VIP database of all the customers that have walked in, contacting them on the phone, emailing them, messaging them, dropping them down into a funnel of like, be the first to experience Misk at Night and then do a call to action with an offer of 50% off drinks for that week. Getting them, so there's that online strategy of socials, then there's the offline strategy of building the database with everyone that's walked in. So what we've got is we've created a little plastic, I would say, or Perspex VIP card with a QR code, and we give it to people who we think that's had a really good time. We go, scan this, you'll be the first to enter our VIP list. They put their details on, they're on our VIP list. That goes through it's called UpViral, that goes through a funnel. And we can be able to set up a campaign for that, to be able to email them and SMS them offers. And if they share that to their friends, they get an offer as well. So we're building out that campaign. Then there's the traditional EDM campaign. And then there's obviously through the communications on the floor of day to day, building up that hype. Dinners are coming soon. We're about to have a mad time. Get ready. Give me your details. I'll jot you on. Bring your family and friends. So it's holistic. It's not just a let's rely on social media approach. No fucking way.
Yeah. Dude, this is such fucking good information, because I feel like too many people will start, like you said, start some sort of restaurant, cafe, whatever, because me and my partner love cooking this, or me and my dad love cooking this, and they'll forget that, yes, you're a restaurant or you're a cafe, but you're in business still. Mm. They'll forget that you're in business and you need to market and attract attention and do things like PR and attention hack just as much as any, like just as much as my business needs to do online. Mm. And I just wish there were more education out there. And I'm sure there is, but it comes down to like, how much do you want it as well?
Of course.
You know what I mean?
And you got to get, I think the key is with anything that you do with business, right? You got to get people excited, right? I learned one of the biggest, secret weapons I've got now is I'm able to get people excited and to believe into my vision and what we're about to achieve. And that comes from tone of voice, your personality, your vision, how you deliver your vision. If people aren't on board, whether it's your employees or your customers, and they're not excited, you're not going to have the result. You've got to create that excitement of, fuck, we're going to miss out, or I want to be part of this journey because this is going to be good for me. I believe in this vision. That's the key as well. You got to have excitement and good energy around you.
100%. And even like sometimes it just comes down to, it can be as simple as if you're not that sort of person that doesn't naturally or might not have this gift that you have to see this, to have this vision. It's like, just think about if you were walking on the street or if you're a customer, what would make you sit up and pay attention? Like put yourself in the customer's shoes of like, what's going to influence you to take action, right? There's so many things and that people can do. It's like some people will give up or they'll close up shop and they'll be like, I tried everything, man.
Yeah.
But did they?
But some of them, you know, there is bad luck, I believe.
Of course.
But there's also, I feel like there is bad luck, but I also feel, this is crazy, man. So there's a point and I feel like it's like a dark point in your life where you're like, do I have bad luck or do I just need to keep digging in this dark trench to get out and do whatever it takes? And it's at that point where people just stop. And I've been there many times where I'm like, I feel like I'm going to fail, or I feel like, is this the right thing? Or I feel like, fuck, I just can't break through. But you just got to keep going, because if you just go the other way and go, yep, it's bad luck, it's the economy, it's downturn, it's whatnot, you're going to fail. And I experienced that obviously through the picnic, but where I really felt that was when COVID hit. When COVID hit, within 10 days, hand on heart, I started up a new business called The Picnic at Home. I had brand new packaging, brand new. I had a website with Shopify. I had stickers. I had shipping tags, the whole lot. Within 10 days, photo shoots, the whole lot. And I was delivering meals all over Sydney in my Range Rover at the time. And I knew I wasn't going to make money. I knew it. And I said it to my accountant. He's like, Jade, you need to stop. You're not going to make money. You're actually going to lose money. And I said to him, for me, this is not about money. For me, this is about staying relevant, attention hacking, keeping my staff employed, because I know when this fucking shit ends, right, we're going to be the first things on people's minds, right, and they're going to come back straight to us because we've been pioneering through. And long and behold, that's what happened. Well, the busiest cafe outside of, as soon as COVID ended or whatever, the first rush, we're the biggest, busiest cafe.
I think where people can struggle and even like where it'd be easy and to struggle with hospitality is like you said, you can't be in it for the short term buck. Like you're thinking the way I'm hearing you speak and talk about all these things, it's like you're not thinking about how much money can I make this week or next week. It's how much, what can we build for the long term? All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or you got something out of it, do yourself a favor, do me a favor, do your friends a favor and share this with them and they can come along on this journey with us. Thanks again and I'll see you next time.